Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. We talk a lot about saving for retirement. We talk less about saving for a new baby, and boy, those babies can be expensive. Today, we're going to look at some of the financial considerations to think about before a baby arrives, and then the follow-on of the next, let's call it 20, maybe 30 years of your life. Kurt Rosentreter is a CPA, portfolio manager with Manulife Securities, and father of two. How old are your kids?
18 and 21.
Oh my gosh. So you have the perspective as a parent who has walked this path directly, but this must be a conversation you have with clients all the time.
Every day, once a week, once a day, I'm in some kind of conversation about kids and financial planning.
I can imagine. Okay. So where in those conversations, where do you start?
Well, before they have kids.
You know, let's start there. They haven't had the kid yet. We're starting there.
Then you say to them, there's three dimensions to baby planning you need to get your mind around. One is, do I need life insurance because I'm now going to be responsible for other people? Two, should I get a will done now that I'm responsible for another person? And three, the whole financial cost of having a kid from the moment they're born to growing up to age 18 to post-secondary, the whole financial timeline and the cost of that. But three major planning points related to having kids.
How do you frame the cost? I mean, at this point, it's too late. You can see they're coming in. They're having a baby sometime in the next couple of months. It's too late. It's not a financial decision anyway, but it's too late. But what's the number in your head? Hundreds of thousands of dollars, sure.
I'll tell you how I look. It's interesting conversations. Listen to this. So I've got lots of clients that never have children, and I have very similar people with similar lifestyles that have had kids. You know, looking at where they get later in life, just in terms of accumulating financial wealth, I would say it's $1 million difference.
Wow. Yeah. That's significant. I think it is. My kid's worth $1 million.
When you add up the cost of summer camp, long-term savings for university, if they do that through RESPs, you know, how much meat your son eats out of the fridge, all of the stuff over say 30 years, it can add up to a lot of money. That's a big difference maker, to the point where when I talk about retirement, not what we're talking about today, talk about retirement, I actually coach people on how many kids they should have so not to affect their retirement. Well, that's not good thinking, but I do that.
I hope your kid drinks milk direct from the fridge, from the carton. I want to ask you about the other element on the cost front, because sure, there is a line item and many line items on expenses. There also can be an impact on revenue. And sadly, this is a very much a gendered thing in today's culture. How do you tiptoe into that piece of it?
Well, if someone's going on maternity leave or paternity leave for the period of time where they're going to be at home with the little one, the new little one, I'll tell you, usually couples or individuals or partners are pretty stressed about the financial shortfall they may face if their employer is not going to top up the paycheck and they're living on EI or sometimes less. And like, I've had them in tears, worried about not having enough money, where I've literally said a few things. One is, why do you think this is going to be expensive? Like, you're going to be sitting at home with a little one, and actually the cost of like the first 2 years is among the cheaper end of having kids, because when they get mobile and now you're going to swimming and summer camp and you're going to dance, that's when the real cost starts. Mm. So often they're almost wrong on how inexpensive it can be in the first year or two. However, it very much depends on their paycheck and what it's been going towards. As you may know, a lot of people now need two paychecks just to pay their mortgage.
Yeah. And incremental cost, maybe not in the first 6 months, but in the first year on daycare, which can
be. Daycare is a doozy. That's right. Right. So you got to look at this in phases. Is that, you know, is your lost income, if there's going to be a lost income while you're at home raising the little one, is that going to affect your imminent costs that are cost of living, like food, shelter, mortgage, stuff like that? Or is it simply more related to peripheral costs that you'll grow into related to daycare and camps and stuff? And then there's a longer term perspective. Oh, okay, you're going to stay on 5 years of maternity leave. How does that start to affect things like retirement and when you'll be debt free on your house?
How do you help them horse trade? because I think there would be decisions they would need to make on discretionary spending, when and if they go back to work, whether they have child number two, do they lower the contribution to their retirement plan in those years? That can be a complicated algorithm.
When we start, if I catch them before they've had kids, I try to get them to do some basic budgeting on their cost of living. You know, when you think about it, before you have kids and you got paychecks, life's easy. Lots of money for travel and clothes and fun, right? And the good red wine, maybe. Mm. But once you lose that one income and things tighten up, you really got to start with basic budgeting. What do you spend money on in a month or a year? And then once you've got that groundwork, you can start to look at, okay, what needs to go if it's really going to be tight? Or, you know, I'll also say start building up a tax-free savings account before you have the first child. Well, why? Well, that'll give you extra money when you still are generating it for bills and stuff that comes up along the way, like a major car repair that won't otherwise go in a line of credit.
I am evangelical about the RESP. And in fact, I've started making it my baby shower gift. I wait until the child is born, and then I sit on the phone and wait there while they open an account and set up the automatic transfer. And then I cut them a check to provide a bit of a boost on that front. Please tell me you are equally passionate about the RESP.
RESP is the cornerstone of whatever your child's going to do post-high school, if it's going to involve any kind of education. Trade school, university, yoga instructor, I don't care. You need an RESP because the government's giving you 20% free money every buck you put in up to a limit. So I'm shocked when I see so many parents around 40 years old with eight-year-old kids that haven't opened one yet. And it's often for the same reason. Not that they didn't know about it, more that I don't have the money for it. And again, I come back to, where's the money going? Did you do a budget? Did you evaluate your cost? Did you explore whether your grandparents can fund it or your parents can fund it? But either way, absolutely, Bruce, cornerstone of where you start. I think a lot of people looking back over 10 years just had the impression that wasn't as broadly available for other non-university purposes. Not so. It's quite broadly available. You could share the money between the kids. And even with the RESP maximized, if they do a four-year major program at an out-of-town university, it probably still won't be enough. So you should go into turning 50 when your kids are age 18. No, you might even have to top it up a bit more beyond their summer jobs.
There are very tough conversations that we as parents need to have either with ourselves or with our spouses and probably with our kids about the trade-offs that need to be made on money for the kid, for orthodontics, for rep hockey, for clothing, for a cell phone, versus the savings that we need to contribute to retirement. And yeah, if you've got buckets of money, that this isn't an issue, but many, if not most Canadians, are living much closer to the line. You're a third party. How do you deliver that tough love?
You know what? This conversation starts around some very sensitive topics, such as, do we need to have two incomes in the household if it's a couple? Where they can often be at battling on this very decision, where the independent financial planner can come in and really neutralize arguments and say it's mathematical. If you want to achieve more than your children's goals, also your own retirement goals, and often more than that, then yeah, you do need two incomes or not. So you can quantify that and take the steam, the level of stress down by quantifying it. But then when you extend it further into trade-offs between, like you said, rep hockey, extend to summer camps, which can be crazy expensive. If you just cannot do it all, then yeah, sitting down and having a conversation about priorities. I'll tell you something. This is harder. This is a really touchy area because the number of times I'm in this conversation where the two parents don't agree. And a great example is, well, if you don't have enough money for university, let's say, just using that as an example, because you did put a lot of money into summer camps and $1,500 iPhones. Okay, does that mean you're going to make your children go to school in town to cut the residence costs down? Or does that mean you're only going to cover the first degree? And you can see clearly they look at each other because they've not heard this line of thinking before. Mm. Yet it's totally where they're going to be finding themselves in a few years. So it's powerful. And then one will say, no, we're covering the kids till they're done school. The other one says, no way, my parents only helped me to the end of the first degree. Mm. And these are powder keg questions where I would say that they struggle to come to the answers among the two of them. And they either talking to their friends or at least talking to a financial planner that maybe has perspective among hundreds of people like them will give them a way to diffuse their disagreements and look for rational answers that are often financially based versus emotional.
Do you light incense or blow a referee's whistle when faced?
I don't ever let them get to that point because I think when you've done a lot of this work and you can talk from a leadership position, they listen. I think that's the key. I'm not selling them anything. I'm talking about goals, the cost of the goals, and the pathway to get there. That's math and income tax often, and how hard they're going to work. That's a lot more straightforward than promising them success by buying a stock or a mutual fund.
Yeah, and then you get the cute little baby who maybe is going to go into the NHL or be a dancer with the National Ballet, and you got to make sure you fund all those things. Kurt, these are critical questions, and they're complicated questions. Thank you for simplifying for us.
Always a pleasure, Bruce. Thanks so much.
Kurt Rosentreter, CPA, portfolio manager with Manulife Securities. And we were talking about budgeting for the baby.